Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jenna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting.
And hello and welcome to Happy Hour here. Jenna Spilbor, Carol Pesci, some fella who, thankfully you folks can't see the video because I almost started this show here just now with leaving my video open in our Zoom session. And that's just, my apologies, ladies, my apologies. How's everybody doing?
Frankenberry, you have a voice for radio and a face for TV. So
that's
stop
right.
It.
You are too kind and too full of crap, but thank you very much.
Stop it.
Oh. Yeah, so summertime, we're here and enjoying the weather has, because of the fact that for some reason now, it doesn't actually get hot until July any longer. but now we've got, we've got some temperatures.
Yeah, and some smoke.
I was going to say
we've got some really nice. I like to call it. It's kind of a soft Armageddon lighting. You know, at the end of the day.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, when you look up
it's
and
creepy.
you've got like a blood orange sun. You know,
the blood orange sun is actually cool. Unfortunately, due to that smoke, but it's the whole outside looks like it's got a sepia filter on it, and I hate it.
That's a good way to describe it. Yeah,
it's an orangey yellow. I like it. It's just
you like it.
Oh, I think it's great. I really do. I mean, I like post. You know, I like post Armageddon flicks anyway. So it kind of has that feel.
No, I can't. I can't stand it. I can't.
Crazy to think of the magnitude of the fires that this is the effect.
Remember, guys, this happened
3 years ago.
I was going to say, it wasn't last summer, and it was real bad for a long time.
Yep.
Right now, I did want to chime in with some breaking news, but hold on, because it deserves this. Okay. I had to do this on fly. You guys ready?
Effect, Frank and Mary.
Wait a minute.
Oh, cool,
we'll see. We might have to cut this out, but are you ready? Okay.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Here we go. Not quite what I wanted, but it's pretty good though, right?
No, we heard one little beep.
Yes, we heard one little beep.
Is that supposed to be the breaking news sound?
Yes.
Yeah, Johnny, okay. It was much better when you did it yourself. Just do it yourself.
Yeah, so do it again.
Okay.
Much better.
Good. So John has breaking news from Catland. But before we do that, because we were talking a little bit about this off air and then it became funny and nostalgic, so we wanted to share with our listeners. When she said, remember that breaking news, that sound? And I said, do you remember? Oh, gosh, we're dating ourselves.
I know.
When TV used to shut off after certain hours. And I know there's like millennials going,
what?
What? And it would go to like a blank screen and like,
the static.
Like we had 13 channels and then it would shut off at a certain hour.
Right. And it brought up, but it would also bring up that screen that just was a big circle. It looked like a graph with a circle in it. Basically it was like, you know, it was like telling you that the world had just ended.
Yeah. Like an atom bomb.
Yes.
Target.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Well, you're both older than me, so that's probably...
Do you remember when we had to get up to change a channel?
Oh.
Well, that's back when we had human remotes.
Yes. So, guys, when I was in grade school and would stay home sick from school, I can remember, and adding to this, having to look at a TV guide because there was no digital channel guide. And I would look at TV guide. I'd be so freaking lazy that I'd be like, okay, overall, over the next 8 hours, which channel has the best shows? And I swear to God, I would put it to that channel and leave it all day. And
really
I would suffer through certain shows that I didn't love because on average, that channel had the best shows for the day. True story. Oh, the young people scratching their heads right now.
They have no idea. None.
Well, we said the word reading, and they went right to their phones and their Bluetooths.
Oh, 1,000 channels 24/7 now. And right. It's like, there ain't nothing on. We'll still flip through and be like, there ain't crap on.
That's right. It'll Bruce Springsteen 40, was right.
Takes 45 minutes to figure out what you want to watch. And the other thing that we were talking about off the air is that now your TV itself will ask you if you're still watching it.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane.
So I switched to Optimum Fiber a couple months back, and it doesn't even ask me anymore. It just shuts off after a certain amount of time.
Oh, that's bull.
Yeah.
Well, I'm okay with that. My TV does the same thing. After a while, my TV's like, all right, screw you, dude. I'm out.
Well, it's the feed that shuts off. The TV stays on. But the troubles we have today with
the
stuff we shouldn't be watching anyway.
I know, but I can't. So that gets me mad because I have to have that TV on all night from the moment I fall asleep to the moment I wake up.
Yeah, see, I can't do. I've got to have a dark room. See, I had, had an ex that was at I always had the TV on, and that was actually one of the main reasons that, besides the fact that nobody wants to live with me, which I understand, but also I just couldn't sleep in the bed. I couldn't sleep with the TV on.
We don't have a TV in our bedroom.
You don't even have one?
No.
What if you're like... What if it's like a rainy day or you're sick and you don't want to get out of bed? And you
that's
just
what a couch is for, Spielborg.
Well, remember,
couches, they have couches.
Remember our Frankie Bear, I don't know if you ever came upstairs at my house. But I think Jonna has seen it. So off of our master bedroom, we have a double-sided fireplace. And on the other side of the fireplace, there's a doorway to go through. We have what's called an AM kitchen. So it's attached and it has a fridge, coffee maker, sink, and the TV's in there. So it's like... a short walk from watching TV to go to bed.
Is there a couch in there in the AM?
Yeah,
kitchen?
A little love seat. Yep.
Okay. See, even the AM kitchen has a little baby couch, John. That's what couches are for. My sister doesn't have a television in her room, and she's on the second floor. TV's downstairs.
Ooh. In my next
that's a big step.
In my next life, I'm definitely having an AM kitchen, but it's going to come with its own cook, and that's what I'm going to have.
And wine fridge.
In my next life. Well, you must have a wine fridge in your AM kitchen.
No, we do not. Just a fridge.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Well, that'll work.
She's roughing it, Jonna.
I know. I'm actually embarrassed that she admitted that on the air. Can we edit that out, Frank and Barry? I don't know if I can be friends with her anymore.
So what is your breaking news, Frank?
All right. Well, now hang on a second, because now I'm mad. Okay, wait. All right, that's a little better. Did you hear that?
Nothing.
No. Okay, Jonna, what you need to do right now?
Give it up.
Stop.
Okay, sorry. I can't.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay, so the breaking cat news. I'm just cool. So proud of myself. I know nobody's going to care about this, but I am so
I care.
Proud
I got
myself.
Popcorn. I got popcorn.
So proud. Okay. I think I told you guys, new batch of kittens came up like about a month ago or so. Did I mention it or did I fail to mention it?
No, you mentioned it.
Okay. Well, I just one day out of the blue, I contacted, there's this one woman whose name is Kim. I call her Kim the Cat Lady. She has been the only person in the cat world who has ever helped me. And she's kind of militant about it. Like when I let her know that there's another batch, like she, kind of cracks the whip and makes sure that again, she brings over traps if I need them, she's good. So a couple weeks ago, she was like, you're going to catch these cats. You're going to do it on a Friday night. I'm picking them up on Saturday. And if you don't do it, she like scares you. She scares you into doing it.
Nice. Good for her.
So one Saturday morning, I put out, at the time I had three traps, but four kittens to catch, right? At the time I put out three traps. I got all four kittens. One morning. And then later that day, I caught a fifth cat, Ugly, who's an adult cat. He's a male cat. I believe he is the father of some of these kittens. He's got one ear. The other ear is all chewed up.
Oh, poor fella.
Yep. All chewed up. He kind of sometimes he'll limp. He just looks like he's had a really hard life. Like,
can you spare a dime?
Yeah, the ladies love him. And I actually saw him. And Punky, the original mother cat who has started this whole
mess. She's the one you gotta get.
I know. And I'll tell you about her too. I've caught them doing it. I've caught them doing it. And so that is also bothersome. So now he, Ugly is being cared for because he needed an antibiotic. He's got a lot of wounds, according to Kim, the cat lady. He's got a lot of wounds, but he's on the mend because he's being cared for, and he's been fixed. And the four little kittens, they've been fixed, and they're actually... they're going to try to socialize them to see if maybe they could be house cats at some point. If not,
okay,
they're going to come back to my backyard and I will continue to feed them for the next 20 years. And
they're not coming in the house.
No.
Good for you. I'm so proud.
There's no, I don't think there's any room left there, Carol. I mean, she's already, what'd you do? How much did those additions to your house cost?
There is no room for any more cats. And if you don't believe me, then you could try to pry it out of Mama Chewy, but you won't.
She won't. She won't tell.
You won't get it. So I am very, very happy, though, that it took only one morning to get this latest batch. Now, the mother cat, I did try last weekend, and I'm going to try again this weekend. But she, I don't know, you guys, I mean, animals can be smart. Certain animals are smarter than others. I get that. She absolutely knows what a trap is for. She knows what it does. Wow. And since I trapped these kittens, I have the traps on the deck unset, which is part of the plan. Like, you're supposed to kind of just sort of get them used to that. She's like, nope, I'm out. Peace out. I'm not coming. I'll starve. I'll starve before I come up on your deck with those traps there. So I don't know what we're going to do about her, but that's the situation. Five cats in one day. That's a record probably for me.
That is. That
everybody
is.
Everybody
else. All, I mean, we're talking here, Carol, since like the mid-70s, John has been talking about her cats.
Yeah.
And so
mid-70s.
She's up to now, you know, like a cat colony that rivals that island in Greece. And you know, this is the first time she's ever like given us this congratulatory story. Of usually it's like one cat, like every 3 months we'll get like a woo, you know, little like fireworks, sound effects and stuff. Well, sound effects that you make with your mouth, not Jonna trying to find them, and like little sound effects of Jonna cat caught one cat, but her catching like three in one pop. I'm surprised.
And you didn't catch
a little baby Sasquatch or something while you were at it, you know, all the extra
traps. And to not bring them in the house. Like that's huge.
Yeah. That's some self-restraint right there. That's some cat lady restraint.
My favorite of your cat stories, I think, is when your cleaning ladies mistakenly coaxed an additional cat into your house and you went to go in your laundry room. I don't know why, because you weren't doing laundry.
No.
But you went into your laundry room and you're like, who is that? and that cat happened to be pregnant.
Right.
Who does that happen to?
Yes.
No. Right. That's the universe having a real sense of humor.
That's right. Or the time I told you the story about the time where I was doing a football game in Albany, and when I lived in the old digs, and I got a text from my landlady, Celie, that said, you have a new girl. And I texted her back a question mark, and she got back to me with, Mimi liked the quiet of Uncle Steve's apartment. She snuck up behind me when I went up to feed your other cats, and she likes it. And I got home and I couldn't find her anywhere, and I was all worried. She was sound asleep inside the little cabinet I had in the bathroom with my towels.
Aww.
And I'm like, all right, well, the memes has made herself comfortable. She gets to stay.
And did that cat stay with you long term?
She did. Yeah, well, she's not with me any longer, but she did. That was it. That was her spot then. I'm like, all right, well, you have adopted me, girlfriend, so you know, you can stay. But
I don't remember you talking too many Mimi stories.
She's the one that I would refer to because, you know, Cricket, you know, Cricket's upstairs with me. She's been upstairs with me. She's also a downstairs cat. But it was Bella, Cricket the Blind, and Mimi the Quirky. Mimi was a very, very quirky Siamese cat that kind of didn't like it when you petted her, but she did like it when you petted her, and she kind of asked for it, but then she didn't like it, and she made funny licky faces whenever you petted her, and she walked like her legs wouldn't bend.
And she
had a meow that's, you know, sounded like she smoked three packs of cigarettes a day.
I remember that description.
That was the memes. But
so she was Jonna as a cat. Yeah,
I guess. Yes. Yes.
Just one quick thing. I know we're probably going to have a Segu here in a second, but I do want to keep a running tab since we're back on the air, that this is day 58 with no upstairs AC. We're just going to keep this going.
How is that even a possibility? How are you not going and kidnapping the repair person to come fix it?
I know. So I've kind of taken the reins, and I've been in contact with the manufacturer. This is a warranty issue. I've been in contact with the manufacturer, and I'm like, hey, guys, when am I getting my unit? And they're like, oh, well, we're going to forward this to the so-and-so. And nope, we're going to forward this now to so-and-so. So I've had two email exchanges with them and my HVAC guy. So I am hoping that this is soon to be fixed, because not only is it uncomfortable to not have actual central air upstairs, but it's turned me into an old lady. How? I'll tell you. My bathroom
upstairs. I love these conversations of one, Frankenberry.
Yes.
My bathroom upstairs is so hot and sauna-ish. Like, literally, and I'm not even joking, you guys. Like, in the morning when I'm getting ready, like, sweat is dripping down my back as I'm putting my mascara on. Like, it's just gross. And so, you know how old ladies, they go to the beauty parlor and they get their hair washed, like, you know, every so often and done and styled? Yeah. Well, I'm going to start doing that because it's too hot to dry my hair in my own bathroom.
Are you going to put pieces of paper towel under the sisters, under the girls?
No, no. But you know what? That's next. I could use like a headband, like a terry cloth headband, and just wrap it around me, my torso.
That's actually a good idea. That you should wait a minute. That could be a viable product,
right? Called the boob band.
Yes.
No,
she's writing it down, Frankenberry. That's why I know.
I know. It's another million-dollar idea that you guys didn't have that other people did. I know. Fantastic.
Guys. And then we draw on the boob band like little fake tassels, right? Just for fun. So you know it's a boob band and not a headband.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. That's really important.
Well, if anybody
we don't want people confusing it. Yeah.
That, then that's a bigger problem.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's true. But that would be a very courageous and wise and a way to really rewrite your life if I were able to.
Oh God, Jonah, I love you to death, girlfriend. That was awful.
Come on. All right.
Seriously. You tried to work the word courageous in there.
She's going to try again.
Let's back up. Okay. Boob band, little tassels, Frankenberry.
The word courageous don't fit there nowhere.
Sorry. All right. So I guess if you put that band under the girls, you would be wrapping it around your heart.
Okay. That's what I was going to go with, something along those lines. But
okay. Is that better?
Yeah. Well, and who's the guest going to be?
So our guest after the break is Megan Kathleen. She's the author of Leading with the Heart. She's got an incredible story. The subhead is, this is where the courage word comes in, the courage to trust your inner wisdom and rewrite your life. The book is amazing. Her story is amazing. I think we'll all get something out of it.
All right, that sounds good. That is what is next with our guests. You've got Jonah Spielberg, you have Carol Pesci, you've got this Frankenfella, and we will be right back. So please stick around.
Jonah and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonah and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour. Jonah Spielberg, Carol Pesci, this Frankenberry fella. And we've got another show guest for you right now. And somebody who is going. Now, Carol, you told me that you're already loving this book. You're a good portion through and you can't wait to finish it.
I am. And you all know that I'm a bit of a book ho. So I've read a few. And I am absolutely loving her writing style. So we have on the line with us Megan Kathleen. She's a writer, speaker, and founder of Considerate Ventures for over 25 years, which, let me tell you something, hard to believe because she looks like she's about 27. She has been a trusted advisor to authors, celebrities, CEOs, and dignitaries in high-stakes environments and heart-centered missions. Her debut book, called Leading with the Heart, released October of last year. She lives in Austin, Texas with her son, Grayson. Oh, she's a dog lover. And their two dogs, Lucy and Django.
Django? Django.
Django. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we are so excited to have her with us, guys. I'm loving her writing style, and I'm loving this book. And I've only started it. Cannot wait to get into the rest of us. And we're going to hear Megan and her backstory. So Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So where I would love to begin, and where we usually do with our guests, is you've got quite a story. I would love for you to start with your backstory and the evolution of how you came to have the brilliant knowledge that you do in this book and why this book matters to you. So can we start there?
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much. And so my story starts in hardship, like it does for so many of us. Mm-hmm. I had a very rough childhood, but from a very early age, I did feel very connected to my heart, which I consider a big saving grace. So I always felt this kind of whimsical love for nature and for people and just for the suffering in the world. I had a very natural kind of sense of compassion that was really huge for me as I went through this kind of very adverse childhood. But it started with my father ending his life when I was 5. And my mother was obviously then a single mother of 3 small children under the age of 8. And we were very poor. So we were living in San Antonio, Texas, and we are just on the very, very outskirts of the wealthiest school district in the city, which was, I call, kind of a terrible curse of fate, because we felt very ostracized and like outcast from the get-go because we couldn't really keep up with our classmates. And I was a naturally very bubbly, loving child, but at a certain point, it became very difficult to pretend that I was one of them. And, you know, by the age of 9 or 10, I had my first bully, and I just became so depressed and so sad. And my home life was, you know, full of depression and darkness because each of us were suffering in our own ways. And we didn't really talk about it. So I was just really, really downtrodden and felt very alone. And so I started refusing to go to school. And eventually I started to find the thing that I could succeed at, which was failure or rebellion, whatever you want to call it.
Interesting.
Yes. Right. And I think that's a really common thing for people who are suffering. At a certain point, if you can't become the thing you think you should be, sometimes it's easier just to fall into the thing you know you can guarantee. There's a familiarity in that, a safety in that. Yeah. So I embraced the rebel life. And so for me, that looked like, you know, at the age of 12, I started drinking and doing some drugs. I couldn't afford many, but I started to kind of take up with kind of the rough crowd. And what was really interesting about that time in my life is that I developed a really beautiful friendship, a best friendship with a veteran who was 34 years old and living
Jimbo.
On the street. Yes, Jimbo. Yes. So he became my best friend, and he was living on the streets. And, you know, it could be a dark tale when you think about the circumstances.
Sure could. When I was reading your story, and you wrote a story on, in addition to your book for Newsweek, which I read, and I'm like, this could have turned awful.
Yes, I do think about that all the time because it's a 12-year-old girl and a 34-year-old veteran living on the streets. And he was just an angel. He had sparkly blue eyes, and he carried a boombox with him everywhere he went. And he would play rock music, like kind of 70s rock music. And so I eventually just dropped out of school and became a part of this kind of lost soul tribe, really. And it was a kind of collection of everything from teenage runaways to someone like Jimbo, who was a severe alcoholic living on the streets, but really a great person. And so we kind of created our own little world. And each day of my life, I would go find Jimbo at one of our spots. He had different names for them. And we would all come together. And sometimes we'd stay out, you know, listen to music and write poetry and, of course, drink and, you know, just hang out. And it was definitely not typical, but in a lot of ways it was beautiful because we were all suffering. But in a way, we were embracing this freedom that most people with a conventional life never get to experience. Yeah. So there's a lot I could say there, but tell me where do you want me to keep going with the story?
But at some point, and to back up for our readers a little bit, you were 5 when your father took his own life.
Yeah.
But you were told he had a heart attack. And it wasn't until I think you were 12, that's when your mother told you the truth. I think maybe carrying that was too much of a burden for her. Do you think that's why she...
I think she was concerned about it being age appropriate. But it,
okay.
And it was actually seven. I was seven when I found out the truth.
Okay.
But it was awkward because it wasn't something that we really talked about. She took us to one therapy appointment and shared the news, and that was it. And it didn't really feel... I felt a bit taboo to bring it up. So we all kind of internalized it in our own ways.
And so, and where I would love for you to take this next, Megan.
Yes.
Like you hear that, you had that loss, your mother's grieving so badly, she's not managing you well as a parent, or doing the best she could with mm-hmm. what she had, I'm sure, as we all do.
Mm-hmm.
You take up somewhat of a part-time residence outside with a homeless 34-year-old alcoholic veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't destroy your life. Like, I would love to know, what was the turning point, or what was the impetus? And maybe it's what you already said about you've always been that heart sensitive person that allowed you to not get completely sucked into the dark side, if you will, and build the life that you have to the point where you're enlightening the rest of us on how to live a quality and heart-centered life. Like what turned that ship? What opened that door?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One is I love to think deeply about solutions. So I've always been a seeker. I've always been wondering, you know, in the beginning when I was younger, I was so confused why we weren't just taking care of each other. I didn't understand why we couldn't mm-hmm. take care of the homeless people on the streets and why we weren't being kinder to each other. I was in a school district where I was shunned because I didn't have money and because my life was different. And that's the very place you would have expected me to be encouraged and inspired. So part of it is I've always been looking and watching and paying attention. And so after a couple of years of living on the outskirts, I had completely dropped out of school in eighth grade. I wasn't going to school at all. A few things happened. One is I started noticing what was happening to the people around me, because it was cute in the beginning. Of course, I was free. We were listening to music, poetry. We were living this life.
No school.
Thought, yes.
Yeah.
And I thought we were in many ways better at that point in my life. I really did think of it as the haves and the have nots. And I did judge people that had wealth and prestige. And I felt like we were living the real life. So for a while it was wonderful, but I started to see where it was all heading, because the people around me that were part of this group, I saw addictions forming. I saw different types of abuses bubbling up. Even me, I had early relationships, and they were not good relationships. I was experiencing some abuse in that time as well, even though I was in many ways protected and never, you know, sexually compromised in a way that you would expect with a young girl being around older people. I was still experiencing my own versions of abuse and relationships. And so anyway, I started to really notice that everyone was going down a certain path, and I didn't like where it was headed. And I also, you know, just another beautiful stroke of luck, I randomly walked into this retail store close to my home, and I walked in and I got a full-time job completely unexpected. I wrote 16 on the application. I was only 14, but it put me back in the space of people who were living more conventional lives. And it reminded me of what was available to me. And I really saw the juxtaposition between the chaos that was growing around me, because again, it's, you know, it's cute the first few months maybe, but after a while you start to see the problems that arise from this other life. So I just really became determined to really turn the ship around, because I knew I didn't want to go in that direction any further. And I knew that I had to do it, because it was never, I was always alone. And so I knew it was up to me to make some choices. And I think the fact that I've always been a seeker, I've been willing to look for the answers. I've always believed the answers are out there. So a combination of just paying attention and being willing to read books and look at what other people are doing, I began the path of getting out of that rut and onto a different looking path.
Megan, this is Jonna. So just because this is actually amazing, were you not... Did you come by that on your own? In other words, when you dropped out of school in eighth grade, were you not being guided by your mother? Did your mother know where you were? Like what happened there? Was there a rift?
She was very, very depressed. So she was in many ways absent. So she was keeping a roof over our heads and kind of the bare minimum. She didn't like what we were up to, but she didn't really have a lot of strength. And mm-hmm. so I kind of think of her in those years as a bit of a shadow. So she loved us and she did what she could, but she wasn't really thriving by any means. It was really just survival for her.
So can we talk about the magic? And when I say the magic, like, to me, it's amazing. And my own father kind of went through something similar, not exact, similar. Mm-hmm. But there is a magic that happens where you don't have the guidance that maybe many of us do, right? The adult influence, positive adult influence, et cetera. Yet, and even you're so young, yet you figure out somehow in that little brain that mm-hmm. this, I need to do something different. And then mm-hmm. you also do that something different. To me, that's a magic moment or a series of moments. Can you describe that piece of it for us?
And so do you mean, what do I attribute the magic to specifically?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I think it's two things. One is what I mentioned from an early age. I really, really always felt like we live in a beautiful, beautiful world. So I just felt so connected to the energy of love. And, you know, we could talk about what that means for so many different people, but in general, all the suffering I saw, I just knew that there was this inherent goodness that we all have access to. So that never left me. And I remember there was one moment when there was a lot of really, you know, horrible people that were coming into our group, including one of the abusive boyfriends I mentioned. And I remember just pondering with my friend at the time. And I remember thinking, I will never choose the dark side. I will never. Mm-hmm. And I just always had that conviction. And the other thing that I later came to realize with reflection is I had access to social mobility, which I didn't realize. Like, I used to just think, wow, I'm so great. I work so hard. Look at me. And I was somewhat prideful. But I later learned from experts in that social mobility field that I had access that other kids don't have. For example, I had aunts and a grandmother who were very proud. And even though they weren't heavily involved in my life, they always told me how wonderful I was. And they were strong women and they were educated women. And so I had access to this kind of energy of my own innate power. And I think that's a big part of it. So I think when you consider other people who had really dark, sad lives, sometimes it's just they didn't have the access to see what the other side even looks like. So I do understand that it's, you know, I'm educated and, you know, I saw other women who were powerful. I think that was in there before I even realized it as well.
Megan, yeah. The title of your book is Leading with the Heart. What yes. does that mean? And it's not necessarily like, although it could be, being in a leadership position and leading with the heart, but I imagine it's universal what you're talking about. What does that mean to you? And let's talk for a moment. We can get metaphysical here. We've done that before in the show. Quantum physics, that energy of love, the power of the heart. Can we talk about that and maybe a little bit more to, like, a little bit aversion-y, somebody who's not been exposed to this?
Yes, yes. I actually love to talk about things in the simplest ways possible because
I love that.
Yes, yeah, me too. And that's just really who I am in the world because I love to uncomplicate things because in my viewpoint, the wheel has already been created.
I need you in my pocket.
Thank you. I need you in my pocket too. We have a lot of similarities. I was reading up on some of your experiences, but I love simple because I think that humans make things harder than they have to be. And all of the universal truths that are powerful are so simple and they're so all encompassing. So for me, leading with the heart is this, there's many layers to it, but if we think about the metaphorical sense of it, we know that we all come into this world and we are handed ideas of the way things should be, what success looks like, who we might want to aspire to be like. And as humans, we're not taught to think about what we think about. We just kind of take it for granted. And unless we have these kind of moments of pain or just big awakenings, we just kind of autopilot our lives until the very end, which I know you and Jonna have both experienced just from reading about your stories. It's these big moments that shake things up. And so from a scientific standpoint and just from a common sense standpoint, our brains, like to be the same as yesterday, because we know our brains have survived yesterday. We know that we can survive the tragedies, and our brains would prefer to keep us the same as yesterday because our brains have verified that we can survive it. So our tendency is to just keep reverting back to what we know, and we don't really ever think about it unless we choose to think about it or life happens to us and we're forced to think about it. So for the heart, I talk about how, you know, the brain keeps us safe and small and predictable in yesterday, but the heart invites us to our own unique expansion. And for me, the heart holds a unique blueprint for each of us. And I mean that in a metaphorical sense. But when what I realized is that the way I got from that rough childhood to a successful looking life was by optimizing and following all these rules to create the look of success. And I achieved it. But I was really disappointed to have no happiness along with it. I was really, you know,
I think that's probably more common than many might think.
Yes, I agree, because you think about all these people.
The resume looks great, right? Yes. Why am I unfulfilled? Yeah.
And I agree, it's true for everyone, because we are pursuing all of our dreams and goals, whatever they look like. But if we're day to day not really feeling fulfilled, content, inspired, joyful, it doesn't have to be a 10 out of 10. But if life is just kind of passing by and we're not feeling that sense of meaning and purpose, it's because we're doing something that we haven't really thought about much. We're just on autopilot. So I like to talk about the heart as guiding us towards a unique path that is for each of us. And if we start to follow it, it will guide us towards our own life that is actually perfect for us and not the life that maybe everyone told us we should have. Mm-hmm. And the way I talk about accessing it, this is a tool that I
oh, that was my next question.
Yay. Okay, good. Yeah. And I hope am I talking too fast? Am I
no,
just on?
You're,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Okay, good. I'm caffeinated and inspired by Frank Gehry. So,
yeah. Do me a favor, please do not be inspired by me, whatever you
I am. When I heard your voice, I was like, wow, look at all that power and just energy. I'm like, gosh.
You have made it. You have made right choices already there, young lady. Don't be making the wrong one.
I agree with her.
Oh, I love it. So, okay. So yes, the tool that I discovered, and I love to teach it because again, it's so simple, is as humans, we can all relate to two feelings. One feeling is the feeling of being lit up and inspired and you kind of leaning in. And it's what I call the heart giving you a yes, like a yes with exclamation points. And that can be small things or big things. Like for me, I love a rainy day. I love hot coffee. I love a schedule that's not too cluttered. I mean, I can go on and on and on of what I love and my yes. And we all know what that is. And it's something to pay attention to because we don't think about it enough because we don't think it matters enough because we're so used to just, you know, cracking the whip and pushing ourselves through life. But the yes list is the power list because the more you start to give yourself what's on that list, the more you open up into a life that will be much better suited to you. And it's not about choosing comfort over hard work. Like you still have your goals. You still want to put in the effort for whatever is worth it. But it's the idea that instead of, you know, self-flagellating and cracking the whip and just pushing yourself to these goals that don't feel good, you're actually leaning towards a path that feels more inspired and more uniquely aligned with you. And the opposite of that I talk about is when the heart gives you an ugh, like a ugh, gross, don't want to do it. That's when you feel depleted and drained. And those are both powerful signals that you can start to track because it goes very deep. But if you focus on the big ones on either list, you'll start to see where you want to direct your life. Because the ugh list, we all have them. But if you start to think about how much ugh you have in your life, that is a clear sign that you need to do what you can to lessen it to the best of your ability and more and move towards the yes list. So a quick example for me is that before I wrote this book, I was going to grow my company because that's successful looking. That's what success looks like. Why wouldn't I want to do that? And so I did it. And right away, I ran into the burnout, the unhappiness, the uggs of all of that. And I realized I am not someone who that doesn't light me up. Like what lights me up is to have space in my day, to have a lot of quality for the clients that I do take on. And I like to have time to dream and to write. So I realized like my UGG is being super scheduled and busy, but I used to think that was success. I was like, that's, you know, okay, I'll pause because I know I'm going on quite a bit.
No. I think this is brilliant and I love it. I'm taking notes on some of your ideas, but something else you talk about early in your book is the science and structure of the brain and our reticular activating system, right? Do I have that right? Is that part of your book?
I do touch on that, but to be honest, I don't even remember that part of it because tell me more.
No. So it could be, so one of the challenges we face, and I think it's more challenging now than ever, is our job to be a filter because so much comes at us constantly through our phones, through our computers, through life, through the news, through everywhere, that a skill to develop is to choose what you focus on, to choose that point of what you want to, because it's impossible for our human brains to take in all of it. But we do get to choose what our filter is. And by you just talking there about your yes list, and it's okay to recognize the UGG, because to see the UGG and recognize how that makes you feel helps you then identify what it is you do want. So at the very simple bit of advice of start paying attention to your yes list. What lights you up? And the more you look at that, and then your reticulating activating system in your brain, which is, I mean, it's a valid thing. It's not a woo-woo thing. Begins to see more of that. You actually filter out the UGG and you start to see more of that.
That's right. And I love just going back to just the pure, simple truths. What I think is so exciting is that I have found that I am more successful than I've ever been because I make that the focus. And because if you notice the signals in your body, the UGG may not be an UGG for everyone, but it's telling you where you can be most successful. So I could have grown my company and that would have looked like success for some people, but the way that I like to live, the way that makes me feel happy and fulfilled, isn't that. So I took that as information and I kind of started pivoting more towards writing and taking on a smaller group of clients. And what's happened is I now have so much more capacity. So I think a lot of times people think of this as a soft thing, like, oh, we can't lean into the heart. Oh, good for her that she's privileged enough to do it. I have to live my real life. And it's not true. It's actually the most successful strategy you can employ to become more powerful to the point where you'll have so much more to give, because sometimes people think this is selfish work to lean into the heart or to lean into what lights you up. But what they miss is that, when we are living from this more inspired place that is unique to us, that really fulfills us, then we are so much bigger and we have so much more we can give. So I see it as this beautiful kind of human responsibility to finally stop beating ourselves down, to stop bullying ourselves, to stop using this old archaic strategy of thinking we can force ourselves into a mold to one day be worth it, to one day be successful. Instead, turn to what is unique to you, where you blossom, let your heart guide you in whatever path. And if you start to do it slowly in the everyday, you'll start to see where your mind will say, oh, you can't do that. You don't deserve that. You can't just, you know, focus on photography. Who cares if it lights you up? You need to, you know, earn that dollar right now. Like, so we will you know, beat ourselves up trying to keep ourselves small. So with practice, though, it's like a muscle. And soon enough, you'll start taking a chance on those things that really do light you up, big and small, and you'll start to get away from some relationships that start to drain you on your UGG list. You'll start to say no to things that really just make you kind of a more frazzled person. And what happens is you do become more successful, more powerful in the sense of, when I say power, it's not gross power. It's the power to give, the power to serve, the power to...
Megan.
Yes.
I knew I was going to love you before you opened your mouth, and that we would definitely want to have you back on the show, and we do need to wrap up here in a second.
Yes,
but I
yes.
do have to say, you are my sister from another mister.
Oh,
because high on my UGG list is being overscheduled. I feel trapped. So I'm with you there, and I appreciate you validating that that's okay.
Ladies, wait, Carol. Before we wrap up, can I just have one quick question? I got because you brought it up, Megan. So for the skeptics out there who say, okay, I want to lead with my heart. This sounds good. I understand the feels and the UGG, and I get all that. But what do you do when your head is saying, but how are you going to pay the bills if you lead with this other organ called the heart?
Yes.
And do you just ignore that and keep following your heart literally? Or is there like a quick fix for that problem?
I would say the short answer for the skeptics is start with the small stuff. Don't worry about the big stuff because you'll learn it over time. Like just start giving yourself the little permissions to do the little things. And the point is that you will still do all the things you need to do to survive and take care of life. But this will teach you a way to eventually do it in a much grander, bigger way. So for the skeptics, I would say start with the smallest. Don't try and, you know, bite off the big career changes. Start with just everyday little things. Like maybe you want to be in a room that's not so brightly lit, or maybe you like to, you know, maybe you want to have hot coffee every morning instead of rushing out the door. Like start little tweaks in your day and you'll see the changes.
I like we can call them baby beats instead of baby steps. We can call them baby beats.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Yes.
Megan, you're amazing. I knew you would be. We're wrapping up here with Megan Kathleen. She is the author of Leading with the Heart, The Courage to Trust Your Inner Wisdom and Rewrite Your Life. If people want to buy your book, learn more about you, follow you, how do they do that?
I would suggest just searching me, Megan Kathleen. That's MEGHANCATHLIN. If you put that in Google, you'll find me.
Amazing. You are fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, for all the wisdom and love that you put into your book. And I will stalk you and get you back here sometime.
Thank you. Likewise, I enjoyed my time with the three of you. Thank you so much.
And you know what's funny there, Megan, after Carol said, how can we get in touch with you? And you told us how we can get in touch with you. And you ended and said, you can Google me. And there was a pause. Like a genuine pause. And I wanted to jump in and go, John and Carol, she's here. Don't Google her now.
I heard that pause too. I was like, interesting. Okay.
I'm like, holy, you're not Googling her now?
I love it.
Oh, you're talking to her. We're saying goodbye to her right now. Google her later.
Amazing.
Okay. Well, everybody out there, you can Google Megan later on. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. But we are not done yet with the show. We still have segment number 3 on the way. Jonas Billboard, Carol Pesci, this Frankenfella, and we will be right back.
Jenna and Carol on K104. It's happy hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's happy hour with Jenna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time, third time here. Jenna Spielberg, Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
Frankenberry.
Jenna, and with the quick one again. Like you're afraid you're not going to get it in. Hello, Frankenberry.
You are both on my yes list.
Aw.
Well, that's nice.
We like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm good with being on a yes list.
Most people are on my UGG list. Most of them.
So Megan was fantastic.
She made a lot of sense. She made a ton of sense.
Oh, I love it. And then you know what I love too? The simplification of things. Like life can feel and is sometimes so complex. And you take some powerful insights and simplify them and how to apply them. And she certainly does. I can't wait to read the rest of her book.
And I'm going to download it too. She reminds, like there are some moments when she was talking about the whole UGG kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, there are days that I'm in just one perpetual UGG and I will do something on purpose to make myself feel good for like, seriously, you guys, maybe only 5 seconds, but it's relief. And then I'm like, wow, I got to do more of that and then maybe do it a couple times a day. So I think maybe that's what she meant by, and then taking baby steps or baby beats, we're going to call them that. I am, I'm going to put this one into good use.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. I'll do the same. I mean, I've got particular little places that I like to, I mean, they may not be the personal places where you say I want a dark, you know, I want a nice comfortable room with a cup of coffee. But, you know, I've got places where it's like my brain needs to take a break.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go play one of these word games.
Yep.
You know, right now. Okay, screw you, world. And there's a couple of games I've come across recently where it's like where you have to connect things that are similar. And then it's a big circle of connecting things that are similar. So, you know, the A connects to B. A does not necessarily connect to C, but B connects to C while B connects to A. And then you roll through them. But I'm like, you know, hey, don't bother me, okay? I'm trying to figure out why pineapple and anvil are connected, okay? And it's not the Roadrunner. Stop trying to give me hints. I don't want the hints. I'm cheat. I don't want to cheat. So, you know, yeah, that kind of thing. You just need to find that space to give yourself a little bit of a breather. And yeah, I understand
peace,
that
full. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Peace. All right, guys.
Peace. Peace out, then.
Peace out. Right. Speaking of peace, peace out.
Okay. I still love you both anyway. All right. So, for Jonas Spillmore and for Carol Pesci, I am Frankenberry. Thanks again to Megan Kaplan for joining us here this morning. And we have more Happy Hour for you in the future. So, make sure you tune in with us the next time.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spillmore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.